right now, scientific reports. The first will be given by Professor Artsumanyan. The title is 90 Years of Raman Effect, Surface Enhanced Microcars Mapping of Organic Molecules. So the floor is yours, Professor Artsumanyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everybody. The title of my presentation is 90 Years of Raman Effect, Surface Enhanced Microcars Mapping of Organic Molecules. Dear members of the Program Advisory Committee, I would like to say that the Raman community all over the world celebrates this year the 90th anniversary of this effect, and just a couple of weeks ago, there was a large conference dedicated to this effect in Novosibirsk, and I also attended that conference there. Here you can see the outline of my presentation, very brief forward. Then I will take the opportunity of my scientific report to the PAC and will tell you history of this discovery in brief and some key milestones. Then about our current results on surface-enhanced cars and summary. So as the majority of the PAC members here are experts in neutron physics, I believe it's appropriate to say that discovery of the Raman effect and the discovery of the neutron by James Chadwick, they are almost of the same age, about 90 years. Moreover, both these discoveries were awarded Nobel Prize in 1930s, Raman effect in 1930, and James Chadwick was awarded in 1935. So they are going together, these two branches of physics. But I will speak definitely today about the Raman physics, the Raman effect. And I will start from the point that it was discovered by Professor Raman and his student Krishnan in Calcutta in India. And we know very well the exact date when it was discovered, this effect. It was 28th February 1928. But at the same time, I would like to pay your attention that completely independently, the same effect in crystals was discovered by two Soviet outstanding scientists, by academicians Mandelstam and Landsberg in Moscow State University, also in February 1928, but even 1 week earlier. Also, I would like to mention that the theoretical prediction of this effect was given by Austrian theoretician Adolf Meckel in 1933. So as I mentioned already, Professor Raman was awarded Nobel Prize in Physics in 1913. You know that the Raman effect is based on the inelastic scattering of incident radiation on molecular vibrations and rotations. And unfortunately, the effect is very informative, but it is very weak. Only one photon out of 10 million is Raman scattered. And there are two components in Raman scatter spectrum. In the case when you have the excitation from the ground state to one of the molecular vibrational state, it is called Stokes scattering wave. And in the case if it starts to be excited from the one of the vibrational states and falls to the ground state, it is anti-Stokes radiation. Let me go ahead. So I would like to demonstrate you some historical photos of this discovery. So on the left, on the top, you can see this spectrograph of Raman and Krishnan. So they made this discovery on this spectrograph exactly. And what is very interesting, just the first time they detected this scattering, not on the photoplate, but by the naked eye. They just saw here some illumination, which was different from the incident light. And in the bottom you can see the scattered spectrum in benzene, but they got it in the next few weeks or even months. You can see here definitely some lines which are absent in the incident light. This is the Raman scattering lines. A very close spectrograph was in Moscow State University, as I told. But Landsberg and Mandelstam, they were doing their studies on crystals using some very pure quartz, quartz seals, so-called rhinestones. And you can also here see the historical first picture photos of this Raman scattering. You can see the stokes and anti-stokes line, and in the top is the just incident line. At the last meeting in 2017, I told a little bit more in details about the place of Raman spectroscopy among the other spectroscopic methods, and mentioned that Raman scattering is very, very close to infrared absorption. Here you can see the Raman scattering, infrared absorption. They are very close because both of them are molecular vibrational spectroscopy, though the selection rules are different for them. So infrared absorption is sensitive to the change of the dipole moment, and the Raman active vibration is sensitive to the change of the polarizability. And the Raman scattering is also known as a fingerprint spectroscopy, as it is very individual for each molecules. Of course, the classical Raman theory was well developed. And here you can see the equation of the polarizability of induced dipole, this one. And you can see that it consists of three terms. The first part is strong for the Rayleigh scattering. And this is the anti-Stokes part, and this is the Stokes part. It's very easy to get this from these equations. And therefore, Landsberg and Mandelstam, as you can see here, the scattered modes are the combination of incident light and vibrational mode. Therefore, Landsberg and Mandelstam call this effect as combinational scattering. But the Nobel Committee in 1930 awarded this prize to Raman and named this effect as Raman effect. So the word now is as Raman effect. Raman signal is really very informative. Therefore, during the last several decades or even more, the scientists, the researchers, engineers are developing different approaches towards getting more enhanced Raman signal. I would like to demonstrate you some key milestones in the way of developing of the Raman signal. First of all, I would like to mention 1961, when the lasers was invented. Nobel Prize was given to Basov, Prokhorov, and Tons. Of course, this new generation of light source were immediately used in the Raman spectrometers in 1916. Because the lasers are monochromatic, intense lines, light sources, and are very appropriate for Raman spectrometers. Another breakthrough was in 1966, when, surprisingly not in scientific laboratory, but in Fort Martyr Company, in a research group, two engineers, Maker and Terhune, they recorded the first coherent anti-Stokes Raman scattering and published it. The CARS gives you opportunity to enhance the Raman signal for 3-4 orders of magnitude. Another milestone was done in 1974. I also reported last time about the surface enhanced Raman scattering. This is a technique which provides you enhancement for many orders of magnitude, 10 to 10, 10 to 14 even in some cases, so you can achieve a single molecular detection level using the SERS. And also in 1985, the modification of SERS, so-called TERS, tip-enhanced Raman scattering, when you are combining your Raman spectrometer with the atomic force microscope, and you can get a nanoscale resolution imaging here. Of course, from the 18th to the present, the improvement of optics, filters, detectors, soft, and so on. As for the modern trends, though all these options, CARs, ZERs, and TERs, are developing now, and there are a lot of to do at present, but nevertheless, the modern trends in Raman spectroscopy and microscopy deals with the combination of these two options, with the CARs and ZERs, so-called surface-enhanced CARs. I told in my past presentation that we are the only group today in Russia who are doing this spectroscopy and microscopy. And the second modern trend deals with the shell-isolated nanoparticles enhanced Raman spectroscopy. It is also in the focus of our topic, which we started just this year. But today I will speak only about the CARs, the C-CARs. It is just a reminder of our optical platform. Let me skip it. Just very briefly about the physical background of the CARs process. Raman is a spontaneous process, but the CARs is a nonlinear process, so you have to use here strong lasers, pico or femtosecond laser sources. It is a third order nonlinear process. You can see here the susceptibility third order. And to get the CARs signal, the sense is the following. You need to have picosecond or femtosecond laser, two beams, coherent two beams, and one beam should be tunable. So you can tune one beam to the other and match the vibrational states. Match the vibrational states, definite vibrational states of your molecular system. In this case, and in the case of the phase matching condition, you can coherently drive this vibrational mode, and it really works. There is only one drawback of this CARs method. This is the CARs diagram, so you have excitation with the pump beam, coming back to the one of the vibrational state, then immediately another excitation, and as a result, you have the CARs, CARs signal. But the CARs is accompanied also with the non-resonant part. This is its main drawback of the CARs process. The non-resonant component is coming from the electronic contributions to the kappa, from off-resonance transition or two-photon non-resonant transitions. And it makes a little bit different to separate it from the resonance part. This is the optical layout. I will not stop here in details. I demonstrated it to you several times. Let me just mention that we are detecting the CARs and the C-CARs signals in the backward geometry. As for the analyte reporter molecules, in our studies for C-CARs, we use the two acids, DTMB and MPBR. They are very proper for these studies. And for the SERS active substrates, we used very unique materials, substrates which are developed in Moscow, in Moscow State University. Here you see the names of the authors of this development. It's just a ceramic substrate, alumina ceramic substrate, with the layer of 150 nanometer alumina on it, and then deposited cerium dioxide film. It is just the substrate, not yet SERS active. But to make it SERS active, you also need gold or silver nanoparticles. And we used in our experiment gold nanoparticles, which are modified with these two molecules, with DTMB and MPBR via thiol bonds. So let me now pass exactly to the C-CARs experiments. First, we did some test control experiments. We measured the SER spectrum itself without CARs for DTMB and MPBR. The concentration of the molecules here was about 10 to minus 6 mol. And you can see that in both spectrums, there are two dominant lines here assigned to the symmetric stretch of the nitro group at aromatic ring here and two here. We choose these lines for our experiments. Then we made the Raman mapping comparing the spatial distribution of DTMB, these two strong lines, 138 and 1556. And you can see here that we got a very good correlation, very nice picture for cerium oxide light. This is Raman maps for and two DTMB lines. And what is also very important to measure and to define is the damage level, the threshold of this damage of these conjugates. I mean, the gold particles immobilized with DTMB molecules. Also, let me not go to details, but it was really important because we need very low intensity, about only 2-3 milliwatts. To make this mapping safely. And now let me demonstrate you our direct SECARS measurements. Here you can see, I told already about the non-resonant part of the CAR signal. It is very important to detect it and to substrate it. So this is the CARS mapping of the SERS active substrates in DTMB resonance line position and non-resonance position, but in this case, the gold particles are not modified. We don't have here reporter molecules. It's just the map of the gold nanoparticles taken from the gold nanoparticles, and you can see here the contrast. It's written here. It is varying from 250 to 700, and if you will normalize this to this product, which defines the intensity of the CAR signal, so you will get these figures. So the relation is just about the 6. Then we, of course, modified our gold nanoparticles with TMB and MPBR molecules. We got so-called conjugates. And here you can see the CCARS map from this array, taken with this, from this array with a high resolution. And in the option of fast mapping, we just need 1 second to take this image. And the contrast here for the CCARS image is very high. It's about 400. It's a really very good figure. Similar, very close pictures we got also for MPBR, but because the MPBR is not so strong Raman active, so the contrast here is about 50 only. We also compared the CCARS mapping with the SERS one. This is the CCARS and this is the SERS at the same wave number, you can see here. And the imaging contrast, the correlation is very, very nice. You can see here and here the same bright spots. And the imaging contrast for the CCARS was about 50, and just for the SERS is about 7. And this is the 3D performance of that picture. And finally, I come to my last slide. So here you can see the resonant at 932 nanometers, this wave number, and non-resonant 900 nanometer positions. And in the case of the resonant, you can see a big number, a large number of bright spots coming from the DTMB molecules, immobilized to gold nanoparticles. If I will be back here to the picture I demonstrated you few slides earlier, you can see the contrast here when you don't have when the surf substrate is not modified by DTMB. The contrast here was just 6, but in the case you have DTMB molecules, the intensity is much higher and the ratio is about 35. Therefore, we state that we are detecting the CCARS signal coming from the DTMB molecules modified at the SERS active substrate. As for my summary, I would like to say that this is really the very first experiment on CCARS mapping in Russia, which has been done in Frank laboratory. Nonlinear CARS microscopy is an efficient and fast technique for imaging. Really, it is very fast. Let me just one figure say. For CARS mapping, you need seconds, few seconds, 2, 3, even 1 second. But to get the same imaging in the spontaneous Raman option, you need minutes, tens of minutes, in some cases, even hours. And the excellent chemical imaging contrast and ultrasensitive detectability of the reporter molecules can be achieved by CCARS. We sent these studies to the Journal of the Raman Spectroscopy, and it is already published. And as I told you, I presented this talk, a little bit more enlarged talk, at the first day of the conference in the section of the invited talks at this conference in Novosibirsk. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Professor Arsimanyan, for this impressive presentation. We have left for a couple of minutes for a few questions. So who would like to comment? Yes, sir.
So just a short question. And how your this research are complemented with neutron research? Because you're on the neutron lab.
Mm-hmm. Good question, but difficult to answer. This research, there is no just a direct connection with neutron studies. But nevertheless, we are trying to be friendly with neutron physics community at our laboratory. And sometimes we found out some tasks which we are studying at the Raman spectrometer, and we are looking with the neutron beams. In particular, we have some studies, even the published paper using the small angle neutrons scattering. But I don't remember whether you were at the last PAC meeting in 2007 when I was reporting about my our team. I asked the program advisory committee to understand that this is the Raman scattering and we are doing the Raman physics. But when we can find some possibilities to do complementary measurements with Raman and with neutron. We are doing this. But we are also waiting in turn, we are waiting that neutron physicists can ask us, and they are asking us sometimes to measure some spectra for their samples. We are doing that also. But this is not regular. We can't do in a regular way. We are doing, nevertheless, the Raman spectroscopy, and we are doing really it on the frontier edge.
May I ask you a question as concerning the sensitivity of
yes.
your method? I mean now CCARS, not
yes.
general, but CCARS.
Yes.
Could you compare it with other methods or which also have a kind of chemical contrast, which is better, which is worse, and so on?
No. You mean related to the Raman spectroscopy or in general?
In general.
I can tell you the following. yes, I can compare, and the CCARS method will give you the very high contrast for the following reason. What is our aim? We just started. This is our first publication on the CCARS, but our aim is to achieve the single molecule detection with high contrast for not only model molecules. Look, the single molecule detection level has already been achieved in the world. We are not the first here. But they achieved this level only for the model molecules using the CERS option, not CCARS. CCARS option is implementing just in a few laboratories in the world. But when you are combining these methods, these two methods, you can achieve this single molecule detection sensitivity not only for model molecules. This is our main purpose. And it combines two very sensitive and contrast method, CERS, which can come very close to the single molecule detection level, and CARS giving the imaging contrast.
Thank you very much. Further comments? If not, then... Boris.
Very short question.
Yes.
Is it true that you can identify the single molecule on the surface of the sample or also in the volume?
No. The Raman spectroscopy is, of course, the surface spectroscopy. We are studying the surface. Yes, you can go a little bit inside, but not too much. Just a few microns, not more.
So thank you very much. And congratulations once again to this excellent method. So let me thank you once again. And let me announce the next speaker, who will be Professor Bugai. And the title of his presentation will be Solitons and Outer Waves in Biopolymers. The floor is yours.
Excuse me.
Just a small technical problem. Thank you. Okay. Now it's working. Dear Chairman, dear members of Program Committee, dear colleagues, let me present you this report entitled Solitons and Outer Waves in Biopolymers. The aim of this report is to review the current state of investigations of solitons in polymeric change. Here you can see some historical standpoints. As we see, the story of solitons was started in about of 45 years ago. It was the works of famous Russian scientist Alexander Davidov and his group. They studied solitons and amide chain. And since that time, this direction grew up, and modern single molecule spectroscopy measurements even allowed to see what happens in a polymer chain almost in real time. But current report will be related only to a result which was done primarily by our group in collaboration with our colleagues from Vinča Institute of Nuclear Science in Serbia. The first part of my talk will be about the nonlinear dynamics of DNA. Actually, the nonlinear science of DNA and soliton excitation as well was started from the description of two phenomena. First one is the thermal denaturation of DNA, which can be easily measured. And the second one, the transcription of the genetic material. All these bubbles you see in this picture is actually the entity the physicists relate to some kinds of solitonic, or more generally speaking, nonlinear localized wave. There is a great number of such kinds of models which could provide more or less accurate description of related processes. In our research, we mostly use some so-called helicoidal model of DNA. It has 2 degrees of freedom, and importantly, it can capture both phenomena, both thermal denaturation and DNA transcription. The effective Hamiltonian for this system was developed in the works referred here. And what is important, the excitation spectra, these are just acoustical deformation of polymer chain, lie in submillimeter wave length. Actually, these are Tirogas frequencies. And the time scale for these excitations belong to picoseconds. What has been known for the up to the former moment, the research of this model was in active state since the beginning of this century, where researchers discovered several kinds of solutions which can be attributed to collective nonlinear excitation in DNA model. The first sample of such solution is presented here. These are so-called breather solutions. So you can see that collective stretching of DNA and collective unwinding of DNA helix are actually coupled, and such low amplitude excitation can be described in terms of well-known nonlinear model, nonlinear Schrödinger equation, which has as well soliton solutions. And this function psi is actually connected with the real excitation in the system, which presented on these pictures. These excitations are low amplitude. They are suggested to be a precursor of thermal denaturation or the starting site of transcription. And what could happen when the DNA is totally unwinded in the process of DNA transcription? You can see that the deformation of DNA where in the place where RNA polymerase starts to work is really high, and the unwinding of the DNA is also high. There is no oscillation. There is a kind of solitary robust moving entity. And what is important, in order to excitate such an object, we need to apply an external torque, which in real living cells is done by special enzymes. But what can be done else here? We managed to found several new nonlinear solutions which can be attributed to more precise knowledge on how actually the DNA works, to study its dynamical transformations and the processes we want to describe. For example, if the DNA transcription was started in the special place, the excitation which can be described by the driver can be transformed into a more complex soliton, which has 2 components. The first component is breather as well, but its frequency is shifted to a small amount in the red region of spectral. And importantly, the unwinding of DNA is no more oscillating. It becomes to be non-oscillating and growth in amplitude. There is a special condition for such processes, namely the special condition of phase synchronism, the group velocity of the Brewer emitted by emitted or produced by proteins starting transcription need to be equal to the phase velocity of the excitation of the DNA helix, the angular excitation. And in such case, we will get an efficient opening of DNA, which can grow up in more higher amplitude non-linear localized wave. This is the equation which describes this process. And another type of nonlinear solutions we want to demonstrate is the so-called twist solitons. These solitons are somewhat different from we discussed before because they represent overtwist of DNA helix. Also, you can see known nonlinear model which produces soliton solutions. And what can be the purpose of such kind of solitons? When the DNA opens, the double strand need to be untwisted, but the excess stress need to be somehow released and moved away from the transcribed region. So the proteins which produce and carry out the transcription can freely work without catching any external deformation. And as follows from our modeling, when the DNA opens, here you can see the opening and untwisting of DNA helix, and the excess stress is released by the way of such kind of overtwist soliton, followed by some kind of dispersive waves, which are not solitons. So in such a way, we can give more precise description of biological processes. But we need to make some important notice. All these excitations are actually short-lived because of the dissipation present in a real living systems. There is a thermal noise, friction related to other surrounding molecules. So the lifetimes of these entities are enough for the biological processes to start or to function, but they are actually related to very low time scales. But what could happen if we put an external excitation to this system related to some resonant frequencies of DNA strand? You can see that on the simple model of Brewer excitation, we can add dissipation and an external force. And importantly, this force needs to be the excitation related to the action of this external force on the parametric mechanism. This is important because this determines the conditions of resonance. The resonant frequency of external excitations is equal to doubled frequency of DNA excitation. And in the result, we can show that in such simple system, we can get stable dissipative solitons, which can live for unlimited time until the external excitation force is present. For example, such excitation can be done by means of external electromagnetic fields of terahertz frequencies. Our colleagues, yes, this is some sample of decay when there is no pumping by external field, and if there is some kind of pumping with resonant frequency, we get stable excitation. And what is important, our colleagues from the Novosibirsk Institute of Laser Physics experimentally proved this result. They showed that in DNA fields placed in and the terahertz source, they can see the changes in UV absorption spectra. Here you can see the different spectra. And also the changes in DNA circular dichroism spectra. The changes related to the spectra can be attributed to the change, and importantly, local change of DNA conformation, which, according to our theory, is related to the excitation of DNA participative solitons. So in such a way, we can use such approach to predict some experimental facts related to the action of electromagnetic radiation on living systems. Another part of my talk will be related to more complex structures, the parts of the cytoskeleton. Actually, the microtubules presented here are much larger than DNA, and they provide some kind of transport rails to the cell. There is an array of protein grouped in dimers, and those proteins form helical tubular structures, which serve as a rail for the special proteins carrying some cargos and signals in a cellular, intracellular environment. So what is important for us, such system is related to from the physical standpoint of view, this is related to the aligned chain of electrical dipoles. So actually this tubule system is some kind of ferroelectric. And from the mathematical point of view, we can provide an effective Hamiltonian to describe this system, write an equation of motion, including external fields and the dissipation effects. And what is also important to know, the dipoles in such a chain are allowed to flip between the stable state and metastable state. So, this bistability provides the opportunity to form and observe kink or domains in such microtubules. They are related to the polarization and deformation coupled together in such a polymer chain. They can be approximately described by these simple mathematical formulas, and what is important, the measurements made by Japanese using tunneling microscope technique suggest that such entities can be used as an element of molecular memory elements. Also, like in DNA, we can find Brillouin type solutions. Their frequencies lie in microwave frequency region. And what is also can be related to an experiment, that such excitations can be involved in the synchronization of molecular vibration observed in the construction and signal propagation in real microtubules. For example, the results provided by the same Japanese group suggest that the electromagnetic excitations falling in this frequency range are very important for the microtubules to perform their cellular function. Also, we tried to complicate our model and include another degrees of freedom connected with the movement of electrolyte ions surrounding this kind of polymer in a real biological environment. Here you can see the equation for this model and the corresponding equivalent electric circuit scheme. So, when the deformation and the electric current of ions are coupled together, they also can get the deformation in form of kink, and the electric current will be localized pulse of some kind, which can be attributed to also some kind of localized solitonic wave, but in this case we deal with not conservative solitons but after waves, which are essentially connected with dissipation in the system. And we have tried to study the robustness of such signals, and we found that electromechanical signals in this system are rather robust with respect to thermal noise and other deformation in this system. So that we can conclude that microtubule can act as a, some kind of active conductor. And our results really support the experimental findings. Here you can see the first sample of such kind of experiments. The authors put an electric current to the first to the solution and the second to the solution connected with microtubule, and they found that the microtubule amplifies applied current. According to our theory, we can explain these results because the tips applied to microtubule provides very slight deformation, and as a result we get solitonic currents which enhance the applied currents from the external source. In such a way, the microtubule can be think as some kind of molecular transistor system. Also, from our theory, we tried to estimate the velocity of propagation of such electric signals. They are in lying about of several meters per second, and our estimations agree well with the experimental results. So, in conclusion, I like to point out that the study of molecular system is very important, is not only for the understanding the real biological processes in cellular environment, but also they can be applied to construction of some novel molecular electronic systems, which are very popular in computer science and molecular electronics devices, which is actually is a really actively developing branch of condensed matter physics. And of course, these kinds of models provide very good basis for study of radiobiological effects related both to non-ionizing radiation and ionizing radiation. But here we just spoke about the dynamics of such, internal dynamics of such molecular systems. These are the results published by us in this area. And to this moment, I'd like to thank you for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation, Professor Bugay. Questions, comments? Admittedly, we have not too much time left. Actually, I will be a little bit beyond schedule, but nevertheless, it appears that everything was really clear. So let me thank once again for the presentation. And let me ask the third report that will be given by Professor Savelio, investigations of structure and dynamic features of lipid membranes using neutron and X-ray scattering methods. The floor is yours.
Dear colleagues, dear chairman, my name is Dmitry Solovyov. I am senior scientist in Frank Laboratory of Neutron Physics and responsible for UMO spectrometer. And this is a great honor for me to present here my short scientific report. And this talk will be about investigation of lipid membranes using neutron and X-ray scattering methods. First of all, a few words about lipid membranes. Biological membrane serves as a selective barrier between internal compartment of the cell and cells surrounding. And biological membrane varies many processes in the cell, and that's why its composition is necessary complex. And the main part of biological real biological membrane is lipids, and which serves as such structure matrix of the membrane. And the most common lipid in biological membranes is dipalmitoyl phosphatidylcholine, or DPPC. It consists of, here is the molecule of this DPPC, and it consists of one polar head and two hydrophobic hydrocarbon tails. And that's why when we put it in these molecules to water environment, it can spontaneously form such lipid multilayers. Red balls its head and hydrophilic heads, and these yellow are tails. And depending of temperature, we can observe our lipid in different phases. For DPPC, for example, the most common lamellar phases are so-called gel phase. When in this phase, all tails are in transconformations and lipid molecules are well ordered. And when we increase temperature up to about 35 degrees, we can find some local disordering when lipid tails change their conformations and the surface of lipid bilayer becomes ripple. And if you increase temperature a little more, all tails of lipids will be will change their conformations, and lipid molecules became very disordered. And in this case, thickness of lipid bilayers decreasing and area per one lipid molecules increasing. And this transition calls the main phase transition of lipid or lipid melting. We started our work from investigation of the main phase transition of DPPC. Structure in different structure of different lipid phases are well known. Before, it was well known before us, and we decided to complement our these structure informations with some thermodynamical information, some thermodynamical experiments. And here presented DPPC phase diagram in temperature and pressure coordinates. And this line of coexistence of two phases, ripple phase and liquid crystal phase. And you can see that we have two possibilities to study phase transition. First way is fix pressure and going through this axis, change in temperature, and the second way we can fix temperature and go through pressure axis. And we choose the second way because in temperature coordinates this phase transition is very narrow. It's about 1 or 2 degrees, and in this coordinate transition is much more broader. It's about 50 bars, and it's much more easy to change pressure for a few bars than change temperature for 0.1 or maybe less degrees. And the second reason was stabilization processes. When we change pressure, stabilization is much more faster than temperature stabilization at each point. For our investigations, we construct special setup which we used, and here is the scheme of this setup and photo. This one. And the main parts of this setup is hand pump. This is water pump, and this is pump with high precision. High precision, I mean that rotating this pump for... It means that angle of rotation of this pump change volume in the system for a definite value. That's why we use a special transducer, which was mounted on the axis of the pump, and these transducers measure absolute rotating angle, and we were able to calculate this angle to volume changes. And the volume resolution of our setup was about 10 to minus 6 milliliters. And we also have pressure sensor, which measures pressure. And the main part of our setup was high pressure cell. It was made special for us in Swiss. Here is photo of this cell. This cell has a big and thick sapphire windows. These windows are clear for neutrons, and we were able to provide small angle neutron scattering measurements through these windows. And also our sample was liquid, and working fluid in this setup is water. We need special separator which splits sample volume and the rest volume of the setup. And all measurements were fully automated. It controls by computer. And the main feature of our setup is simultaneous measurements of structure and thermodynamics of in our sample. All measurements were performed here in Dubna at small angle neutron scattering spectrometer UMO. Here you can see the scheme of our spectrometer. This is collimation system, sample position, and detector part. And one of the main features of our spectrometer is two detector system, which allows measure small angle scattering spectra in wide dynamic Q range. Due to this, as well as due to high fluxes, we can measure samples for a very short time. And this is the reason why about 40% of all proposals in our user program performed at this spectrometer. And in our case, it was also extremely important because we able to provide a quite big series of experiments and without time wasting. Okay, this is this was an algorithm of our measurements. First of all, we set temperature, and after that, we set after all thermal stabilizations, we set first pressure point, and at this pressure point, we measure Sun's curve. It took only 5 minutes, and per each point, and after that, we record current volume changes and pressure, and change pressure point, and do the same for long region. As a result, we obtain a number of small angle scattering curves, and dependence pressure versus volume dependence of our for our sample. And as our sample was it was lipid multilayers, we had structure diffraction peak on our curves, and the position of peak is this the position of peak defines the repetition distance or periodicity of our layer, and we, using this formula, we were able to find this repetition at each pressure point. And using the second part of our data, this thermodynamical measurements, we were able to calculate isothermal compressibility of our system. And comparing the pressure dependencies of periodicity and compressibility, we can find good agreements between two our methods. From one hand, this distance change between 160 and 210 bars, and from the other hand, compressibility extremely rise at 200 bars. This is, and after that, we use this simple model of lipid in which lipid is some cylinder, and we were able to calculate changing of area per one lipid molecule during phase transition. And this all variables with index 1 is corresponds to ripple phase, with index 2 corresponds to liquid crystal phase. And this value we were able to calculate from pressure versus volume dependence from volumetric data, and thickness of lipid layer were calculated from Guinier plot of from Sun's data. And this difference was 6 Quillian storms, and which is in a good agreement with literature. And these results were published in Journal of Macromolecular Symposia in 2014. And after that, the next question for us was how these 6 storms change the properties of our lipid bilayer. And for answer these questions, we use inelastic X-ray scattering methods. The scheme of experiment is presented here. We had oriented lipid bilayer, which was deposited on diamond substrate. Incident beam was parallel to substrate and, of course, bilayer surface. And after that, we use special detector analyzer to measure energy changes of incident energy changing of incident beam, and we scan these energy changes at different angles. But each time, our scattering vector was in plane of lipid bilayer. In such geometry, all energy changes are caused by only by collective dynamics of lipid tails. And this work was performed with collaboration with our colleagues from Brookhaven National Laboratory and Institute of Langevin, France. All experiments were provided at ESRF at beamline ID28. Here is the scheme of inelastic X-ray scattering spectrometer, and this is a photo of detector part of this spectrometer. They have 8 analyzers on different angles, and we can scan energy at 8 positions at the same time. Here is a photo of our sample. This is diamond substrate. This length is 5 to 5 millimeters, and this is photo from microscope, and this is lipid. And because of DPPC phase diagram is valid only with excess of water, we need special sample environment with big value of relative humidity. It's more than, not less than 97%. And this is a special cell which was connected to humidator and thermostat to control parameters of the experiments. We provide our IXS measurements at 2 temperatures, at 20 degrees and 45 degrees before and after phase, the main phase transition. And as a result, we obtain a number of energy scans. The, each energy scan is a different angle. And we these energy scans were fitted by resolution function, this is elastic peak, and symmetric excitation function, number of symmetric excitation functions. And positive and negative energies corresponding to creation and annihilation of propagating phonons. And during data treatment, we found that for 20 degrees, we need 2 excitation curves to for a good fitting of our data. But for 45 degrees and log U, low angle log U scattering vector, we need only 1 excitation curve. And for other, for the bigger angles, we need also 2 excitation curves. Using these energy excitation energy values, we plot dispersion curves. They are presented here. Field and open symbols correspond to dispersion curves of 20 and 45 degrees, respectively. And red and black line is longitudinal phonons, which can be observed in each material. It's this is sound, classical sound propagation in this material, and this solid line is only for ice guide. And minimum on this curve is bordering of quasi brilliant zone. In our case, this is tail-to-tail. It corresponds to tail-to-tail distance, and we can see that this minimum change changes when we change temperature. It means that tail-to-tail distance increasing in liquid in at high temperature. Slope of this region is this is speed of sound. Yes, in our lipid membrane. And using this parameter value and the slope, we can estimate area per 1 lipid molecule and speed of sound. And you can see if you compare these 2 values, its difference between them is 6 square angstroms, which is in a good agreement with our previous experiments. And in contrast to longitudinal phonon branches, which were observed in lipids before, these second branches were observed were experimentally observed for the first time. And because this branch is similar to longitudinal branch, it has similar softening after then phase transition and changing minimum position, we were sure that this is transverse phonon branch in lipid. And it corresponds to in-plane propagating phonons in bilayer. At the high temperature, we also observed a transverse phononic gap, a transverse branch. And this phononic gap can be identified as the disappearance of transverse phonons at this Q. And it means that we have some local orderings, and this phonon, this phonon exists inside these domains and not exist out of these domains. And this local ordering is not phase preexistence, because using the IXS we can measure only picosecond dynamics. This is some short-living local ordering. And if we have some local ordering, we should have some local disordering around this ordering, or voids, or maybe pores. And these pores are short-living, and these pores could be a reason why the passive transport of some small molecules through lipid membrane is can exist. And here is the results of our results, and they were published in Journal of Nature Communications in 2016. And after such interesting results, we decided to continue with our experiments. And it's well known that a real biological membrane is multi-component, and next component is most interesting and well known. It's cholesterol, and we decided to add cholesterol to our membrane. And here is presented phase diagram of DPPC cholesterol system. Here is temperature, and this is molar ratio of cholesterol. And you can see a number of different phases. And solid ordered phase is something like gel phase in poor lipid. Liquid disordered phase is something like liquid phase in poor lipid. Liquid ordered phase, this it corresponds to liquid disordered, but this cholesterol molecules. Cholesterol is hydrophobic, fully hydrophobic molecule, and it's situated inside the bilayer. And its adding of cholesterol increases the packing density of our bilayer and make membrane more rigid. And here is two regions of phase coexistence. And we choose several concentration points and measure them at different temperatures. Red stars, these points were measured at ESRF, the same ID 28 beam line, and 8 stars, this experiment were provided at Spring A synchrotron. And these two green, it's measured at ESRF too, but not so long ago, and they are not treated yet. Here is the typical excess spectra for DPPC cholesterol system. Treatment procedure is the same, but here you can see that we need not two, three excitation curves to obtain a good fit. And existence of the third excitation curves means the third excitation mode in in our dispersion curve. Here, this is dispersion curves for each point, and green lines is longitudinal mode, black lines is transverse mode, and we assume that red line, this should be optical phonon mode, and in principle, optical mode should be independent, energy of optical mode should be independent from the angle, but we see some dependence, but it can be due to fitting procedure and data resolution. And now we are going to provide additional measurements using Raman spectroscopy, and we want to check if this mode is optical. And you can see that starting from some cholesterol concentration, it's about 80%, we have a new phononic gap, and this gap means, as you understand, some domains in our lipid bilayer. But in this case, this is not short-living domains. It should be, constant in time domains. It's something like phase coexistence. And if we increase in cholesterol concentration, these domains moves to big Q, and it means the small sizes of these domains. And in the nearest future, we will finish with these additional experiments and for data treatment, and we'll summarize our research in your article. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this nice presentation, again showing us the complementarity of X-ray and neutron methods. Questions? Comments? Boris, please. Yo.
Could you please explain in simple words what cholesterol is doing with the substrate, with the membrane? What happens to it?
What changed? Cholesterol changed the rigidity of our membrane. Lipid molecules became more ordered and more, rigid. Rigid. And don't know how.
Is it positive effect, expected one, or it's negative?
I can't say.
From the application point of view.
Cholesterol, as another part of lipid membranes, can dramatically change lipid membrane properties. And in one case, for one process, it's good; for other processes, it's bad. And I can say.
Okay, thanks, Mikhail, please. Yep, Mikhail, please.
What is main phase transition temperature at relative humidity 97%?
It's near 41 degree.
Maybe 42, 43.
Maybe. But we measured at 50 degrees, it should be.
You should measure independently to be sure that you far beyond from the main phase transition temperature. Because is phase transition temperature 97% humidity is, for example, 44 degrees, and 1 degree is near main phase transition temperature. In this case, it is not liquid phase, because just at the temperature of main phase transition, the DPPC demonstrate supercritical properties.
Okay, but we measured at 50 degrees. It's 8 degrees or 9 degrees from phase transition temperature. And we, during our excess measurements, we measure structure factor, and we saw that it changes for 20 degrees and for... And structure factor maximum, it's diffraction maximum, it corresponds to tail-to-tail distance.
It is not a big problem to measure.
We measured it. Yes, we control.
Phase transition.
Sorry?
Phase transition temperature?
Temperature, no. Structure.
Structure, it is not argument.
Uh-huh.
I understand that structure can be similar at 45 degrees, but it is not a problem to measure directly, or at least to look to the literature. It should be published.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we are very much beyond the schedule, so let me thank the speaker and the audience once again. And we will now continue with a coffee break, including poster presentations, or with poster presentations, including coffee break. So please visit the posters definitely, and make sure to reconvene by 12:35. It will be a bit shorter, but we have little time. I'm sorry for that.
Can I ask the members of the committee, please come to the posters. The young scientists are waiting for your attention, for your interest, for your questions. Please do it and visit the ask questions to the young scientists.
And one more technical point. This time we won't have a summarizing poster section. Nevertheless, there will be a voting afterwards as a part of the general discussion. So please make sure to collect your votes.